This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will discuss the life and tragedy of Skunt Rogers, who came to Baton Rouge in the early part of this century and was the talk of the town. He was a pillar of the community, spokesman for the Better Business Bureau, sheriff's deputy, ordained minister, and host of the popular Around Town television show. Yesterday, Rogers was killed in a murder-attempted suicide. As a grand jury was looking into his past, which included a trial in Great Britain in 1992, in which Scott was acquitted on one count and the jury hung on five other counts, he was accused of molesting a 13-year-old boy. We shall talk about this, and we, if things go according to plan, will hear from some people from Scott's past. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Yesterday at about 12:40 our time, Scott Rogers, the popular host of the Around Town television show, was killed in his home in St. Gabriel by a man he had known for more than 20 years, a man who at one point even married Scott's daughter. This man came to the United States with Scott in the early 1990s. Around the mid-1990s. Scott, in Great Britain, where he was a dance instructor in a town outside of London in Bury St. Edmunds, he was accused of molesting a 13-year-old boy and went to trial in 1992. A jury of 12 people, 8 men, 4 women, after a 13-day trial, found Scott innocent or not guilty of the principal count of a sexual offense, but hung on 5 other counts involving indecency with a minor. Scott was a dance instructor at the Bury St. Edmunds Dance and Performing Arts Academy. He had many young men under his sway, and he, of course, now, as we know, was under federal investigation because as he became a U.S. citizen here in Baton Rouge, he had questions that were part of his process in which he was asked if he had ever been arrested, and allegedly he answered no, and of course the answer should have been yes. He also adopted a child, now 10 years old, and was in the process of adopting another child who is 2 and is also a boy, reported by his lawyer as a girl, but it's actually a boy. And on August 15th, these children were removed from his custody. So the last few weeks have been tumultuous for Scott Rogers, and it ended yesterday with his close associate, Matthew Hodgkins, age 36, killing Scott Rogers and shooting himself. Matthew Hodgkins is in serious condition, critical condition, at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center. In the last, 12 hours or so, 15 hours, we've been piecing this together and talking with people who knew Scott and have been tied to the federal investigation. The grand jury was meeting yesterday at the courthouse, but as the jury was about to convene, this terrible tragedy occurred in St. Gabriel. And with us is a man who has come forward, who knew Scott in Great Britain and has known him recently, as in very recently, and he is with us. And because these allegations involve minors, these people, as they come forward, and we may have more than one person today, we will not reveal their names. I know this gentleman's name, but I will not reveal it. But I think he is credible, and his story warrants our attention. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
How long have you known Scott Rogers?
Well, if I may, I'll give a frame of reference so you can understand as I talk where I'm coming from. I met Scott when I was 12 years old. I was a male performer at his performing arts school in Bury. I grew up with Scott through the school. I attended a college that was attached to the school when I was really 16 through 18. I traveled around the world with him on contracts, performed in different countries and at different shows. And then I into America with him in 1996-97, and have been working with him in Baton Rouge ever since.
So you've known him for 23 years.
Yeah, the last time I saw Scott was Monday morning.
How old were you when you met him?
12.
12 years old. You were a student at his dance academy.
Yeah, he had a workshop that came to my middle school, and my drama teacher put me in touch with him. He expressed an interest in me, saying that I had potential, and met with my parents and myself, and I joined the school on full scholarship when I was 12 years old.
When did you become aware that Scott was under investigation?
Probably within 6 months of being at the school, something like that. My recollection of time is a little warped, especially given recent circumstances, but it was very quick. I was aware that he was allegations had been made in 92, I believe it was, and that he was being investigated for accusations made by another student that I did not know personally.
Were you ever intimately involved with him?
With Scott?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And when did this begin?
This began when I was 13, and increased in frequency all the way till I was 18, and continued when I was an adult and I was 18 through to last week.
Why did you follow him to the United States, follow him to Louisiana, and continue to be associated with him if he truly did what you say he has done?
I've been wrestling with that myself this last few days. The truth is, at least as I'm coming to understand it, is that when I met that man, when I met Scott, I was 12 years old, and the the initial relationship that I developed with him privately and then not so privately was I was a 12-year-old kid, and he was introducing concepts like love to me. Through sex, he was informing my understanding of physical intimacy. He would guide me in how to speak to my parents on what to say to people. On some level, I think he raised me from when I was 12, 13 years old. And I think that on some level gets in you deeply. And I think that informs your thinking when you're an adult. It's all I've ever known.
He is was an extremely charismatic individual.
Yes, he was.
Through this, all these years, did you like him as a person?
No. When I was about 26, I got very depressed privately, and I said about love earlier on. I don't know that I know what love is, but I know what love isn't, and I kind of had that epiphany when I was about 26-ish. And from that point on, my personal relationship with Scott, although the physical side has certainly deteriorated, but it's still there, at his request. But emotionally, I've been detached from that man since I was 26, 27. Not all at once. I mean, I spent a year incredibly depressed and not knowing who I was, not knowing what to think about things.
Mm-hmm.
And
I understand, sir, that you have been in protective custody of some sort for a while, maybe a week. Is that accurate?
A couple of days.
Couple of days. How did that happen? What caused you to go to authorities?
I was afraid on the weekend. Scott has, I've known him for 23 years. I've seen him deal with pressures similar to this. I've seen him angry. I've seen him happy. I know that man better than anybody else. And starting on Saturday, he scared me. He looked desperate. He looked, I looked in his eyes and I said to him at the time that I can see right through you. His eyes looked glassy, and he said some things to me that left me fearing for my safety and for my life. And Tuesday, a week ago, not this week's Tuesday, but the week ago, I hit a low point myself, and I called a number that was provided me by a federal agent. That federal agent called me back Monday morning of this week, and I pretty much broke down and asked to meet them, and they have been amazing. They've taken me out of that situation, and they have been taking good care of me in the last few days, but I was scared. I was scared for my safety and for my life.
Did he threaten you?
He said that he wanted, we were walking down the driveway on Saturday. He said to me, he turned to me after, hours of talking about how he wanted to end his life. And he looked at me and he said, you know what I really want is I want you and I to go upstairs and lay next to each other and just shoot ourselves in the heart. So if that's a threat, then yeah, I guess. And so I sat with that on Saturday, I sat with that on Sunday, and then the agent called me Monday morning when I got to the office, and I was afraid.
Mm-hmm. When did you find out about the events of yesterday?
I was sitting waiting to go into court to testify. I had a subpoena handed to me 2 weeks ago, which started all of this. And so I was sitting waiting to go into court to tell my story. And I probably found out an hour and a half after it happened. I think the agents went out to deal with it, and they came back and they put me in a room and they sat me down and they mm-hmm. explained what had happened.
Well, better than I that Scott had become a big part of this community. He was a sheriff's deputy.
Yeah, I helped build that.
Well, how did he do it?
I don't know that I can explain the motive. I just know that there's, Scott Rogers is a very smart man. I've always said to him, he never expresses confidence in himself. He always thinks he's worth nothing. And I have, in all honesty, I've said to him over the years, his gift is with people. He can take an individual or a group of people or a room, and he can make them smile, make them cry. That's his gift. I think personally, knowing him the way I do, I think he has, he's emotionally, I don't know if he's quite all there. He functions like a normal person, but when push comes to shove, I think there's something emotionally broken in him. I think he is haunted by demons. I think he knows what he did when he was 30, and he's never ever spoken about it.
Okay,
in his mind it's all love. In his mind it's special connections and deep love and.
Hold on. We have to take a break, but we will return with this gentleman who knew Scott Rogers very intimately back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is one of the most tragic shows we've ever done, maybe the most tragic. And I knew Scott Rogers. He was on this show March 3rd, 2011, and we'll hear some of the interview, maybe a cut or two, today. And I think this story is obviously going to have legs, so we will be talking about this, I'm sure, in days to come. But Scott was on the show I previously hosted. I saw today, I looked it up 14 times, starting August 4th, 2000. He started going by the name Scott Rogers at some point, because when I looked him up, when I originally interviewed him, he was going by the name Scott Richards. He was under federal investigation at the time of his death yesterday at 1240 in St. Gabriel. Matthew Hodgkins is the man who is believed to have shot and killed Scott Rogers and then shot himself, and he is in critical condition at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center. We're talking with a man who knew Scott 23 years and was a close associate, as you've heard, up until the last few days of Scott's life. Not years, we're talking days. Why did Scott end up in Louisiana? How did that happen?
We initially flew into Dallas, Texas, and we spent a few years living with a lady out there. I think Scott had a connection here. He knew a guy that a British comedian that was in Baton Rouge for some reason, which is why Scott ended up here. And then we all came by car to Baton Rouge, and why does anything happen? I don't know, but that's kind of how it went.
What was the relationship between Matthew Hodgkins and Scott?
Matthew, when I was a kid, this is kind of 13 years of age, Matthew was also subject to sexual abuse at Scott Rogers' hands. I know this for a fact because some of that abuse was a group in nature, and that's how I know that Matthew was subject to the same stuff that I was. Matthew and I never talked about this stuff. No one did. But Matthew, I believe the physical connection with Scott ended sometime in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003. And I believe that over time, Matthew has taken wherever he was in his head and turned that into more of a brother relationship with Scott. That's my opinion.
And he married Scott's daughter.
Yes.
Well, obviously, this defies the imagination of some people, and might even the host might even be included in that number. It's a story that if we were to make it up, people wouldn't believe it.
I sat down last night and tried to write this down, and it's just too much.
Scott had a terrible childhood himself, didn't he?
I've learned not to take things at face value. But he expressed on many occasions how he was physically abused by his father, punched in the face, beaten, so he had to go to hospital, that kind of abuse. So, yep, that's the impression I'm under, yeah.
Why did he change his name?
He's told me over the years that his first name change was when he was 16. He said he wanted to be a different person, which I can understand on some level. He was Richard Scott Rogers when he came to America, and in 2006, he's always gone by Scott. His full name was Richard Scott Rogers, and he dropped the Richard in 2006. He did not want to be found by people back in the UK for obvious reasons, and that's probably some of the motivation for at least going by Scott and eventually being Scott Rogers.
Did you live in the house with him?
Yeah.
Yes. How many people were living in that house?
This year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Six people. And was Scott intimately involved with all of them at one time? Or at some point in his life?
Did you ask the question again?
Was Scott intimately involved with the six people in the house at some point in Scott's life?
Two of them, Matthew and myself. You know, they're on that. When I was 13 years of age, I was not the only person that was sexually abused by Scott. There are at least four that I know of personally, and those people, they were not involved in the initial allegations that Scott went to trial for in 92. The four that I'm aware of were either going on during that or came or occurred after that. And I think that that group included Matthew and myself.
Why would Matthew do this?
Yeah, Jim, I've had things don't feel real to me right now. But there's a couple of things that I do know. The first is that I'm just lucky that the agent called me on Monday and that went the way it did and that I got out of that house, because when Scott looks at me and he's distraught, I mean, like I said to you on Saturday, it's like a madness. It's frightening, and it's all I've known for 23 years, and I know I can only imagine Matthew felt the same. You know, that he was subject to the same 23 years of sexual abuse, of emotional abuse, of manipulation, right down to your core, right down to your understanding of what love is, of what sex is, everything. And so when I try to picture Matthew on Wednesday, I feel so sad for that man.
When did Scott become a minister?
Um, 2011, I believe.
His church was, I think, called the 1334 Church, a non-denominational church at Cortana Mall, where the show was produced.
Yeah, in 2011, he got it. He was involved in another church that got him into pastoral work. And when that ended, he wanted to start up his own church. So it was 1334, started in 2012.
Okay. He had this fabulous facility, but yet no real means, known means of support. How did he do this?
What do you mean? How did he build?
How did he build this mini empire with no job of significance? I'm in this business. I know you can't build the kind of empire he did with the money that comes from hosting a 1 day a week, 1 hour show that airs at 5 in the morning on Saturdays and Sundays.
When I was 16, 17, I was living with Scott Rogers, and he purchased a dilapidated property in just outside London. And there were probably 6-7 people in our group at the time. And we pretty much rebuilt that entire house in a year with limited help from contractors. It's always been that, as a group, we do what...
So he probably sold the house and made a good amount of money.
Oh yeah, I mean, a little bit here, a little bit there, but the show has been started in 2003 in a shed. I think we just it just grew over time. I mean, the facility that we're in now was
he was
part of a sponsorship arrangement. So.
Very talented man. He sold himself and his show very well. He did have there were many advertisers on that program, I know. And he was a guy who lit up a room, no doubt about it. But how did he go on the air? Much of his show was about his faith and he quoting the Bible. And how did he live this double life if what you're telling us is true?
Back at the academy in Scottsdale, King, that school was about 800 students strong, and he was very much in charge. The structure of things made it easy for kids to be at his house with a justifiable reason, which is where a lot of the abuse took place. Over the years, to my knowledge, I mean, I've been right next to him for all that time. He is, the pedophilia, which is what it is, doesn't feel real to say it, but it is what it is, was limited to the group that incurred it when we were at the academy. And over the years, people have left. And to my knowledge, the only physical intimacy that persists to this day is with me. So I think he's still the same person, I'm sure. And I'm not a doctor, but capable of the same thing. But from what I've seen, at least in his time here in Baton Rouge, he has tempered. He has he's changed on whatever emotional level he functions. He has his relationship with me changed from one of controlling abuse when I was a child to one where he on many occasions expressed that he wants me to be his partner. So I think I don't think a person ever really changes, but I think he's changed over the years. I'm having trouble getting my head around, really feeling that things are real. And I have messages on my phone from people expressing sorrow, genuine sadness, and I can't help but think that it's their right to. The Scott word is that they knew existed, and it was real, and he did some wonderful things, but he also did some illegal things,
right?
Some devastating things that people just weren't privy to, and I don't know that you can judge or hold a person accountable for, for willful, ignorance. I think Scott was definitely intentionally keeping that information from the people that came to care for him, the people that watched the show, and the people that genuinely loved him here in Baton Rouge. And, while that's real, there's just the whole history that they're not privy to.
Okay.
Which is, I think, what makes it such an unbelievable and crazy situation.
Well, we thank you for joining us. This is a terribly difficult subject for somebody.
Go ahead. Make clear. There were two adopted kids, fostered and adopted, involved in this, and nothing happened to those boys. Those boys were loved and well cared for.
They were not abused.
No.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you, sir, and I appreciate your time and your courage.
Yeah.
And good luck to you. And as you can imagine, Scott Rogers, he was a well-known person on at least two continents. And now we're joined by a man who has come forward, who also was a student in that dance academy in the early 1990s. And he is joining us from across the pond. Good morning, sir.
Hello, good morning.
When did you find out about this?
Do you mean the current events now, or
yes.
Where Scott Rogers actually was in the world?
When did you find out about his death?
I found out about his death, I'm in the UK, so it was yesterday evening, UK time.
And you had involvement, as I stated, as a young man. How young were you when you met Scott?
Well, my my situation is I was 11 years old, and I was placed under Scott Rogers' care by the social services. I was taken away from my own parents for for reasons that don't really need to be discussed right now, but I was placed by social services in the court under the care of Scott Rogers when I was 11.
Did he abuse you?
Yes. One thing I would like to be very clear about, and I am referring to your other guest today, is that Scott Rogers, and this is something that is very difficult to explain as a victim, but I've had, you know, many, many years now of speaking to psychiatrists and counsellors with regards to what I went through at the hands of Scott Rogers. He is a master manipulator. He is an expert at brainwashing. He is the worst predatory paedophile that you could imagine. And when you're a child and you're faced with that type of monster, with that type of intelligent mind, you don't stand a chance. Somebody once said to me that paedophiles are the worst type of con men. And he absolutely was. When I was 11 years old, I was taken away from a very bad situation, much like the children that he has recently adopted or fostered. And at first, he was very nice to me, and he said that I was going to be, I was a very successful dancer. And then gradually, very gradually, things started happening on sexual abuse. And at first, it was terrifying, and I didn't know how to speak up about it. You have to understand that when you're conditioned in this way from the age of 11, I was systematically beaten if I didn't comply with what was required of me. I was trapped under the roof with this man. He was married at the time with his wife, and I was abused. All the time. And if you didn't comply with him, you would be, for want of a better word, held hostage. I was beaten with various implements if ever I refused.
By him?
Obviously this is
You were beaten by him?
Yes, beaten by Scott, by Scott Rogers. At the time, he was known as Richard Scott Rogers, and his biological daughter would have been 3 years old, I think, possibly 2 years old. And there's no way to get to once he's got you, once he's trapped you. I had no means of escape. I had no one I could turn to. He makes you believe that it is entirely your fault.
All right, hold on, sir. Calling from Great Britain, former associate of Scott Rogers, and we shall return after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And for those just joining us, Scott Rogers, the popular host of Around Town in Baton Rouge, who's been in this community for about 14 years or so, he died yesterday of a murder-attempted suicide. Matthew Hodgkins, 36, is accused of killing Scott and then seriously wounding himself. He is in critical condition at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center, is Matthew Hodgkins. Scott was 52 years old, according to reports. There are other reports listing his age at 49, but I think the 52 is an accurate number. We heard from one person who claims to have been a victim, starting back in the days when Scott was a dance instructor at in England, and he was accused in that time in 1991 of abusing a 13-year-old boy. A jury acquitted Scott on the major count but hung on 5 additional counts. And the first gentleman was there in Great Britain then, followed Scott to Texas, then to Louisiana. This victim stayed in Great Britain, but says he was beaten and molested by Scott Rogers. He says, starting when he was 11 years old. 11 years old. How many were there that you know of or you believe to have been abused by Scott?
That I know of, I know definitely of. There are, I would say, five. That I believe that there were. There could be 10 plus.
All boys? All young?
All boys of some form or another. Obviously, the worst situation is when you are fostered or adopted by him and you are trapped with him, which ended up to be the case, unfortunately, with Matthew. Matthew Hodgkinson, your previous guest was also in a similar situation, and as I mentioned to you before, there was you were conditioned and brainwashed and forced from such an early age that it was very, very extremely, if not impossible, to escape from his clutches. He, as I said, you were made to feel extreme shame, extreme guilt. He made, when I was very, very young, he made me believe that everything that was happening was my fault, that I had made him do these things to me. And it's this and other threatening behavior from Scott and from associates that were still with him, who I don't blame. He is the only perpetrator in this crime. I don't hold anybody else accountable. But in the years that I managed, when I did finally manage to escape from him, which was possibly 10, 11 years of abuse, then I was threatened and into silence, and all I wanted to do once I managed to get away was escape. I had nobody to turn to, nobody to help me. I had no money. Everything was controlled by Scott. Every single element of your life. One of his favorite things was asking you what you were thinking. If you didn't come up with the correct response to what you were thinking, you would be put through one of his, I'll call it now, one of his torture sessions. And this was, it was psychological torture. You weren't allowed out of the room. It was physical torture. You were beaten. There were numerous occasions where if you refused his advances, if you refused his sexual abuse, then the sexual abuse became very violent. And this is, it's very difficult for somebody who hasn't experienced what the boys under his abuse experienced to explain it. Somebody who's not a professional in this field of abuse, to a layman, it's very difficult to understand why nobody would come forward and why you couldn't say anything.
Well, why didn't you come forward before today?
Well, when I escaped, as I said, I wanted to get as far away from the situation as possible, and I wanted to have my freedom, and I ran from him, and I kept as far away as possible away from him. He was a monster that I felt had the means to destroy me. I often feared for my life. There were often situations where I was strangled into unconsciousness. I was...
Wait, hold on. Strangled into unconsciousness. By whom?
Yep. By Scott. So when I did escape, I didn't come forward because I was living in fear. As I got older, I recently I found out that I didn't know the whereabouts of Scott. I just wanted to get away from him. And I didn't know where he was. I recently, fairly recently, found out where he was. I found out that he had adopted more children and boys, and it got so much that I couldn't sit back and watch it happening again to innocent young children. I couldn't watch it happening. It was then that I've always spoken out to people that are close to me about my abuse. my family knows, everybody that's close to me knows what I went through at the hands of that monster. And I've spoken to a federal agent in the US, and I've told my story because I didn't want this. I couldn't see it happening again. When I knew it was happening again, I had to come forward and make a stand. As petrified as I was that he was going to somehow be able to destroy my life again, I had to say something.
When did you last talk with Scott Rogers?
Maybe 16 years ago.
What was the occasion?
I had left, and he was desperate to get me back. He put adverts in a local newspaper. He put an advert in a London newspaper trying to find me. I managed to escape because I met a young lady, and her parents were incredibly understanding, and they took me in. I didn't explain the full situation to them, but he harassed and he phoned and he got people, his associates, to phone and speak to her parents and say the most awful things about me. And in the end, they said to me, "You need to phone this man and speak to him," which I did. Mm-hmm. He still refused to leave me alone. I then went to a solicitor, and I instructed that solicitor that if this manhunt, I'll call it, didn't desist, that an injunction would be put in place, at which point he responded by saying that he was very disappointed and he felt that I had been brainwashed by third parties. You have to understand as well that he made all of us call him at certain points dad, which he wasn't. He wasn't our father at all. He made, if we were in trouble, we would have to call him sir, and we would be, we knew that we were going to be administered some type of punishment, whether it be physical violence, sexual violence, or psychological conditioning, if we were told that we had to address him by sir.
Was he a local celebrity in Bury St. Edmunds the way he was here?
No, not at all. He ran a dancing school. When I first knew him, he worked for the local council. His wife was the dancing teacher of a dancing school. He had no dance experience at all, but decided that he was going to be a dancing teacher, which was the time that I was placed with him by the courts. Mm-hmm. He then grew the school. When you asked your last guest how did he manage to support himself, you were talking here about a person that managed to grow a dancing school from nothing, pretty much, through to a dancing school that was taking on an annual basis back in the day well over 500,000 to a million going through the business from nothing.
He was a skilled man in many ways.
He was a master manipulator and a monster. Mm-hmm. There's no better way to describe it. And much as I would not wish anybody to any suffering, and much as I would not wish anybody to, I would not wish death on anybody, but I have to say that the world is a better place without that monster causing any more children.
How has your life been since you got away from Scott Rogers?
Well, my life since I got away from him had been, at first it was ecstatic because I was able to live an actual life. I wasn't forced to do things that were absolutely horrendous. I could make my own decisions. I managed to earn money, and I led a life. As I got older, the impact of what I'd been through gradually started to come to me. I can't begin to explain to you or really to describe the mental conditioning, the mental brainwashing that you go through from such an early age. You don't know what's up, what's down. You don't know what's, you know, you just have no comprehension of, because you're supposed to, Scott had a code of which you were supposed to adhere to. You had to behave in a certain way. And it took me, it took a while for me to become my own person again, to find myself. And as I said, through years of counselling, years of speaking to psychiatrists, I was diagnosed at one point with having post-traumatic stress syndrome because of the abuse that I went through. It's something now that I don't sleep particularly well. I wake up with night terrors, and there is still a part of me that I will shamefully admit that was still absolutely petrified of the man. It was like living in a nightmare. I was trapped in a nightmare, and as a child and a young adult, I had no means of escape, no means of telling anybody, and nowhere to go. When I finally escaped, I clung on to that, and partly to my shame, I ran as far away as possible to get away from that monster.
We thank you for joining us today. And
well,
thank you.
One thing I would like to say, if you have time very quickly before we finish, is that I want to make it clear that with the court case over here, that Scott was not exonerated from the court case. It was a hung jury, and the only reason that there wasn't a prosecution and the trial didn't continue was because the victim and the prosecutors felt that the victim couldn't go through another trial.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And as noted, Scott was on this show, Scott Rogers was, March 3rd, 2011. Ironically, as a defender of the Second Amendment, Scott was a gun enthusiast, and here's a sampling of the interview done with Scott 3.5 years ago.
Well, last year there were 9,484 gun homicides in the U.S., and 69 of those were in Baton Rouge, which means we had 30 more than your former country, and what can we do? Or
okay.
Should we do anything?
Let's analyze this, though. Do you truly believe that if the guns weren't there, we wouldn't have those homicides? Do you really believe that, Jim?
I don't think we would have as many.
I disagree. I think those people are trying to harm people, and they would use a knife or they would use a hammer. Again, you can kill somebody.
It's harder to kill somebody with a knife or a hammer, but it can be done. You're right. And I'm not saying guns should go away either. Mm. I'm just saying that this is a topic of discussion.
I think what we should really be looking at is why these people are killing and looking at the statistics of education. It's all about education, Jim. If we could educate the young folks to communicate better, and if we educated the general public, I think we wouldn't be in the same situation we are now.
That was Scott Rogers, March 3rd, 2011, a terrible tragedy, and the voices of the two people who I think accurately would be depicted as victims were on this show for most of the hour, and it's hard not to believe that they were being forthcoming, and if they are telling the truth, that means that Scott Rogers was living in our midst as a celebrity with this horrible past that was within him. And it is incumbent for us as journalists to make sure that the people we cover are what they say they are, and that we're not dealing with people who are something other than they pretend to be. And I noted on this show that some of the biggest stories in the last few years in this country and in this state have been broken by a gentleman, Dan Moldea, who's been with us, who was working for Larry Flint. But unfortunately, I think we all dropped the ball by not doing a story or stories about Scott in the past. And as a result, Scott is dead, and Matthew Hodgkins is near death. And his chapter is over as a person, but the story of his life will be told in the days and weeks and months and years to come. He left a mark. Some of it was very good, but as you heard from these gentlemen, he did have a past that is apparently quite sordid. Until tomorrow, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.